Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in beautiful, hot, and steamy downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. It is hot in here.
Yeah, our AC is not keeping up when we've got these old windows basically open.
Well, I mean, the windows aren't open.
They just may as well be.
Yeah, they may as well be. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
So today we're going to talk about, why do we get along?
Why don't we just get along?
Why can't we be friends?
You didn't even have to sing. Charles did it for you. You know,
things are proceeding exactly as I have foreseen. No, that was good. That was perfect. That was the response I was looking for. What is it that makes some fish get along with others at certain times for certain reasons for a certain amount of time? Yeah. Last week, we spent the whole hour talking about how to acclimate our new inhabitants to the water parameters of our system. And that went really well. But just because you have the correct water parameters for a fish, and I think today is going to be specifically about fish, not inverts. Just because you have the right water parameters doesn't mean they're all going to get along.
Specifically saltwater fish, right?
Saltwater.
We're going to, because it's a completely different conversation in freshwater.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And so there's, you know, I love it when you read so many of the books and authors, and they talk about the most important part about getting your aquarium set up and having it right is to have a plan and stick to it. And you know what? They're right. It's total bullshit. But they're right.
It's like you're right, but also an asshole. Like,
no one is going to do that.
Yeah, unless it's like, oh, I want my pair of this. Yeah.
I have a pair of blue striped clownfish and I stuck to it. No.
Yeah, and you've also talked about a number of other things that you're like, ah, could I have that?
Yeah, well, you know, that's what the new tank is for.
Yeah, you just set up another tank instead of sticking to your plan.
Well, there's really lots of reasons why that doesn't work. The most important being, I don't know what I want until I see it. And I get that, and that's practical, that's real, and it's time for those of us that, you know, try to pretend we're professionals to stop shaming people for impulse buys.
Why are you looking at me?
I was looking all over, man. I'm not pointing any fingers.
No, we're all a little guilty of this, and I think it's really easy to point fingers after the fact with, like, fish that just didn't get along.
Right.
And sometimes you can do everything right and it still doesn't work.
Well, yes. And then, you know, you can come up with this great plan and then you come into a store like Watercolors and you have this plan and then we're going to tell you you have to wait 4 weeks before you can get your fish, which, by the way, you should wait 4 weeks before you get your fish. And then you see, but I didn't know about that fish. That's cool. I want that. And then you buy it. Or you come up with this great plan and let's use our friend Ian as an example.
Oh yeah.
Right? He came up with a great plan. And we were able to get three of the seven fish on his list right away. And then something as easy as a blue hippo tang, we finally got it in, and all the rest of his fish have been through 4 weeks of quarantine, and now what?
Right.
Right. Now we got to sit on that whole thing because, and we're going to get to this, getting tanks all get along is part of the challenge. But there's all kinds of different reasons why, yeah, come up with an idea, but, you know, let's call it a guideline more than a plan, right? And a certain order of, I'm going to put these fish in this order. And throw that out the window because that's just not going to happen.
Right.
Nobody does that. Everybody goes in with, some people go in thinking they're going to, nobody does that.
Yeah. It's, you got to either be comfortable being a little more agile or you've got to be comfortable being very, very patient for what you want.
and then listen to the Watercolors Aquarium Girlie podcast to come over the tips and tricks to have your fish get along.
I think Riley might be my favorite example of this.
Yeah?
She had the like most detailed list that I've seen. I haven't seen Ian's list, so I can't speak for him, that I've seen. And then like she did the same thing. She started accumulating the fish we could immediately get for her. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while we'd see something else really cool. Let's try that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got a pretty reasonable perspective on it. Yeah.
Right. So how do we get them to all get along? And really what we're talking about here are two main things, and that's aggression. Are they going to kill each other? And food. Are they going to be able to compete with the rest of the inhabitants in the system, right? And you can teach and temper both of those things.
Yeah, we're putting predation aside in this because big fish eat little fish.
Yeah,
doesn't matter what the fish is. If it can fit or thinks it can fit the other fish in its mouth, it will eat it.
Even a yellow tang will eat a trimagobi.
Yeah. Yep. Like exceptions being maybe if you're lucky, some of the cleaners.
Yeah.
But if you're not, or if the fish is like, let me try it, then it will get eaten.
Mm-hmm. I have a fun story about that.
Oh, yeah?
I don't think I've told it before.
Oh, this doesn't sound like a fun story.
No, it's not for the flame angel.
Oh, no.
We had what would be called a medium sleeper goby and a medium flame angel. And I would have put the sleeper goby at about the 4-inch range. So we'll put it about as big around as a thumb. And the flame angel was, they sold it to us as a medium. It was probably a small medium. But it was in the 2.5 to 3-inch range, I would say. Yeah. And so that would put it at what, 1.5 inches tall? Mm-hmm. Put the two in the tank thinking they'd be just fine. It's a goby and it's an angelfish. A couple hours later, I'm looking in the tank and there's just a goby. I'm like, oh, crap. The angelfish jumped out. How'd the angelfish don't jump out? I'm looking everywhere for signs of this angel. And first thing I notice, the lid is tight and secure. Then I look at that sleeper goby, and that is suddenly the fattest sleeper goby I have ever seen. It looked like a python that ate a tire.
Oh my gosh.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I would never would have guessed that one.
Nope. Nope. Thought it would be just fine.
Ugh.
So fast forward a couple of years, and one of my friends put a watchman goby in his tank. Pink spotted watchman goby, which is one of the slightly larger ones. I would put it in the 4-inch range, maybe 3.5-inch range. This one only had one eye. So don't worry about that. His favorite fish, one of his favorite fish has always been jawfish.
Oh no.
We had jawfish that were fine sized jawfish. Yellow had a jawfish that were probably 3 inches. So they were not much shorter than the sleeper goby.
Right.
That evening, he sent me a picture with half a jawfish sticking out of the mouth of this watchman goby.
Ugh.
What's the point of that story? Watch mouth sizes.
Yeah.
Right?
Not just fish size.
Not just fish sizes. Watch how big that mouth is. And gobies? Gobies have big mouths. The only thing that has a big mouth to eat small things is a whale.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Right.
Do you think it's important for us to sort of at the top here talk about a little bit, not go too far into why this is a bit of a different conversation in saltwater than freshwater? Because it is in a lot of ways to me. And I don't know if it's like to do with the environments. Like freshwater environments, we're usually talking about rivers and streams where, you know, it's a little bit more, I don't know, neighborhood-like.
It's full of schooling fish and the reef is not full of schooling fish.
Yeah, like if you don't like the guy in the corner, you can sort of just keep on moving down the line and they're more likely to be able to live in larger groups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Food floats by instead of having to be foraged.
Yeah. And reefs are a little bit, and even reef tanks too, the way that we construct them, mm-hmm. they're a little bit more on top of each other. They're competing for specific holes in rocks. They're all kind of going into the same environment when they sleep at night.
It's a little more like trying to get cichlids to get along, only not as, or African cichlids, I should say. Not quite as challenging.
Yeah.
I'd much rather try to get reef fish to get along than Malawi cichlids.
True, true.
For me, one of the big differences is that, at least from the perspective I look at it at, is that most freshwater fish we keep in the hobby are either shoaling or schooling fish.
Mm-hmm.
So there's generally an evolutionary incentive to look and behave and act like your neighbor.
And get along with.
And get along with.
Yeah.
You're on the reef, there is no such incentive.
No, it is a highly competitive environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even when you see big groups of fish together on a reef, couple of things to remember. First, you're often seeing juveniles. If you're seeing a big group of green chromis getting along on the reef, which is pretty easy to see.
Quote unquote, getting along.
Getting along, right. most likely they're juveniles, and there's one big one that's the boss. But then the other really big thing to keep in mind, if you're seeing that group, just kind of map out the size of the footprint of what they're taking up. And if there's 20 of them, the footprint is probably the size of the table that we're sitting at today, mm-hmm. for just the green chromis.
Yeah, one of the things that I recently read an article that basically postulated the idea that maybe we need to stop thinking of them like as schooling or shoaling fish, because like Antheus, a lot of people get the impression that they're kind of schooling, and they do kind of have a group dynamic.
Yeah.
But some species anyways.
Yeah.
But that might just be a result, not because they're quote unquote a true schooling fish, but because there's so many of them on a reef that they have to get along in some capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good defensive process to like all be out together. Mm-hmm. Like a school works. It makes it really hard to catch them. Mm-hmm. As we know here, if there's 30 fish in the tank, it's harder to catch one than it is if there's 6 fish in the tank, because your eyes can't focus on them. But at the end of the night, they're all going to different holes.
Yeah. When you're seeing Antheus as a group, when you're seeing Tangs as a group, you're not seeing a school, because school is for defense. You're not seeing a shoal. What you're seeing is a feeding aggregation.
I love that terminology.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You're seeing a group of fish that are getting together for lunch.
It is usually above a whole bunch of branching corals where there's a 4-inch crevice every 6 inches for each one of those fish.
Yeah.
How many hidey holes does an average reef tank have? Not enough for 20 Antheus or 20 Chromis. Right.
And then what happens when the food's gone?
Right.
Right. We're done feeding. Yeah, I don't want to be next to you anymore. And these ecosystems are so much bigger than our fish tanks. I should say it. Our fish tanks are so much smaller than this ecosystem where these fish come from.
Yeah. If you want to replicate like a reef and miniaturize it, you got to go down in size with your fish.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. One of the things that like I think a lot of people have problem processing, and this is including myself, is that like you'll look at a 300-gallon reef tank and you're like, wow, that's so big. But then when you compare it to any reef structure at all, you're like, that's nothing.
It's minuscule.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing.
Right. Right. What are the triggers?
Well, there's the blue throat trigger.
But you're so funny.
Speaking of aggression.
So when we talk about whether our fish are going to get along, we are talking about aggression, right? And there are three reasons for aggression, and there are only three. It's that simple. The three triggers for aggression, the three reasons one fish is going to decide, I'm going to chase you and try to hurt you. Three reasons. Are you going to try to steal my house? Are you going to try to steal my food? Are you going to try and steal my girlfriend? If you are not trying to steal one of those three, I have no reason to be aggressive towards you.
Otherwise, it's just a waste of energy.
It takes a lot of energy to maintain aggression. There we go. That's how we're going to say it, right?
Yeah. It's why most fish really would prefer to make themselves big and scary and flare up and then have the other fish just run away.
Right.
And not have to follow through on that. That's their first instinct. So in fish in stressful situations, they're actually a little less likely to be outright aggressive, which is why when you come into our store, you may see fish getting along in tanks that we might say, maybe you don't want to do that long term. It's that it takes a while to establish territory, and it takes a little while for it to be worth it to fight over making it worth it just to say, back off.
Right.
And
right.
you can and only back up so far in a 4-foot tank.
Well, I once read a study that fish take, and this was like 2 years ago, so I might not be remembering the details well enough, but it said that it takes about 6 months for fish to quote unquote get to know each other.
I like that study.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see a classic look in a store that sells clownfish. Well, there'll be a tank with 50 clownfish in it. Mm-hmm. That does not work long term.
No.
Well, unless it's saddleback clowns.
Yeah.
That works. They do that long term. Ocellaris clowns don't do that long term, period. They don't. For a while, they will. And it's pretty cool.
I'm sure there's one guy with a group of like six maroon clowns that somehow makes it work. And he's listening to us and thinking we're idiots.
Well, I do know somebody that has a group of 40 relatively mature Ocellaris clowns. And it works. But that's because there's 40.
Yeah.
If there were 10, it wouldn't work.
And if there's 40, do you notice every single fish that you lose is the question to me.
I feel like at that point, that basically just functions as, like you said, like a Malawi tank.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's going to be somebody on the bottom of the totem pole to me always. And they may, if you're not like targeting that individual, they may sort of waste away.
Right. But he's also had the group for probably 5 years now.
Wow.
And so you'd notice after 5 years a reduction.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say, hey, where's Bob?
It would just be like whittling down.
Oh, there's not that many fish anymore.
That's what makes this conversation so frustrating to have, is there's an exception to every single rule here, because it's like saying, you know, people want to say, do these fish get along? And it's like, well, if I have two friends, do I know if they'll get along? You know, they have similar hobbies. They are the same age. They went to the same school. Will they get along?
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe you throw them together and see what happens. They might get along for a year and then just totally turn on each other. They could be best friends forever, or they could have no interest in each other.
That's the thing that's really hard in saltwater, and I've been waiting for you to say it. You have a particular line that I really like, and I want you to have credit for it.
Right.
Fish don't read the same
book. Fish don't read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yellow tangs eating coral happens sometimes, right? It's very rare, but they're not supposed to eat coral. You're right. They're not supposed to. Sometimes it happens.
But, you know, the one in front of you right now is eating coral.
It just munched a coral. Right.
You can't say, no, they don't do that.
Yeah.
Because it is.
Right.
So we should probably go back to those three triggers and talk about what does that actually translate to when it comes to choosing a fish to put in your tank.
So we mentioned the three reasons for aggression. Steal my house, steal my food, or steal my girlfriend. And I'm not being sexist here. Most of the time, it is male fish that instigate the aggression over choosing a partner.
Can we talk about the one major exception? That's probably like...
Except clownfish.
Yeah, because they're the one... They're the most common fish in the hobby.
Two female clownfish are probably the least compatible fish on the planet. So, yes, we can talk about that one, but I'm not being sexist. I'm being
generalist.
With a generalist with an exception, because, you know, there's always an exception. They don't all read the book.
No.
So, anyway, food, house, mate.
Where do you want to start?
Well, so the three triggers for those aggression are color, or we're going to go in order of importance, shape, color, size. Right? So fish that are the same shape have a very high likelihood of either eating similar or same foods or living in the same house, wanting the same place to sleep at night.
I have an example of that today.
Which one?
We moved a group of fish out of quarantine today.
Yes.
In that group was a purple tang and a multicolor angel. Yes, I know there were multiple of each, but for this specific example, one of each of those. I decided to put them in a tank that had a Tamini tang.
Mm-hmm.
The Tamini tang ignored the purple tang, the fish that's more closely related to it, and went after the multicolor angel, the fish with a more similar body shape.
And a more similar size.
Yeah.
Ended up having to move the Tamini tang into a cube downstairs because I was just like, sorry, the purple tang and the multicolor angel are cooler than you are.
Right. Yeah. I like it. So that's body shape. Color has so much to do with mate. Fish that are flashing the same kinds of colors, they're probably trying to attract the same girlfriend. Flasher and Fairy Resses are classic examples of those. If you have two Fairy or Flasher Resses that both have a lot of yellow, they're less likely to get along than if you have two Fairy Resses that one has yellow and one has blue.
You know what's a really crazy double whammy example that people ask if it'll work a lot? Orchidotybacks and Royal Grammas.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Similar body shape and similar
and
color.
And similar color.
That's what makes tanks that are at 55 gallons and below so difficult to stock. Yeah. It really puts you in this tight circle where a lot of fish have a lot of similarity. I don't know, 75% of the fish that you put in a tank like that are long, skinny fish.
Right.
So it's...
Yeah.
Do you roll the dice with something that's a little bit of a bulkier, long, skinny fish and a little bit of a slimmer one, one that's a little bit more of a different color than the others? You know, it can become quite a juggling act pretty quickly.
Yeah. The advice there is to try and just vary those two things as much as possible.
Yeah.
The last one being size gets a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
Right? Because big fish don't need to pick on little fish. They don't need to show them who's boss as much because it's obvious. I'm bigger. Don't challenge me. And the little fish, with some exceptions, know you are bigger. I will leave you alone. The challenge comes in, and with tangs, and it's a little bit what you ran into with that multicolor engine, the Tomini Tang. The Tomini Tang looked at that purple tang and went, I'm not messing with you. You are bigger than me. But you multicolor angel, we're similar size. We don't know who's the dominant fish here. Let's fight and figure it out. So if you're trying to pair up, let's say a purple tang and a yellow tang, don't put two in the tank that are the same size. They'll have to fight to determine who the dominant fish is.
You know how, like, if you're in a bar and, like, some guy's starting crap and then he stands up and he's, like, 6'5", and you're like, whoa, never mind. That's the response you want in a situation.
Yeah, no, that's the response you want. You're exactly right. Yeah, the other fish to say,
we know how this is going
down. We know how this is going. You're good.
And it works in the reverse, too. The purple tang is going to look at that Tomini Tang and be like, you're not really worth my time. You're not a threat. You're not going to take my food because I weigh twice what you weigh. So I'm just going to push you out of the way.
Right.
Aggression is expensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you don't need to do it, you're not going to unless, I mean, there's always exceptions because there's just some fish that are just jerks, but.
Yeah, there are jerks all over the planet.
I know.
That's right. Yeah. And there are scrappy little guys that are going to look at some 6'5" guy in the bar and say, come on, bro, let's go.
I'm still blown away of, like, one time I stuck I think it was a small hippo tang with a big Scopus tang. And that hippo tang said, I can take you. Yeah. And I literally watched the Scopus tang, like, of course I'm anthropomorphizing, but it was literally sitting there like, what is happening? Like, what do you think I'm going to do to you?
He's like, let me at him.
Yeah.
I throw one punch and he's dead. What am I supposed to do?
You know, that's an interesting point to go to next, right? Because we look at these fish and we look at that aggression and we think how much damage can be done. And that damage scales down. So you'll see a fish maybe that doesn't even have any torn fins, but you know that they've been fighting. And the next day you come back and that fish that doesn't have torn fins, but you know they're fighting, you come back and it's dead. A lot of these fish fight by ramming each other. And if you can picture those fish moving through the water at the rate that they move through the water, and then you scale that down, think of you know, somebody on a ski slope ramming into somebody else as hard as they can, the amount of internal damage that can do. And we kind of lose sight of that, the fact that if that fish hits that other fish hard enough, it can do significant internal damage, and we'll never see that damage. We'll just know that it
really doesn't look like it. Like, when you're even watching the fish, it looks like, I don't know, if you're hitting two pieces of paper against each other, because that's the scale that we're looking at it as.
Right.
But it's like a dude twice your size, bowling you over,
and then you have three broken ribs and a ruptured kidney.
The most you'll really ever see is a little bit of bruising, and that usually indicates internal bleeding going on, and that's not a good sign.
Right.
Force is mass times acceleration.
Yeah.
So, you know, you double the mass and your force is much stronger.
Right. Right.
So what would you say to somebody who wanted to put together, I'm just trying to think of a gray area, like a yellow Watchman Gobi and a yellow Chorus Ras. Somewhat similar color, somewhat similar body, but very different fish.
The behavior of those fish is so different, I don't even know that I would hesitate. A Ras is going to be one that they're not going to take much crap, and a Gobi is going to be one that's not going to give much crap. Gobi's flight. You know, fight or flight. That's the two options. Gobi's flight.
Yeah.
If you have two gobies that are competing for a space, they might fight, but the goby's going to stay out of the Ras's way.
And that's a Ras that sleeps in the sand bed, so it's not competing for... Yeah.
It doesn't want any of the holes. It wants the sand. Yeah. Yeah. There's been an interesting change that's been fun to watch in the hobby over the past, I don't know, 30 years that I've been keeping saltwater fish and reading some of the old literature on fish compatibility and how that's changed. And one of the funnest things that we see now is the ability to pair up fish we never thought we could in an aquarium. And that all comes from the way fish change sex in the ocean.
Yeah, I remember, I think this would have been 2007. I remember a Tropical Fish Hobbyist article that was really excited just because it was talking about keeping two of the same fish in a saltwater tank.
Right. Angelfish are the big one. And so when you go back to the 70s and 80s, when the saltwater hobby was just starting to come of age and some success stories were actually happening, because before that there were people that were pulling off some stuff for a little while, but there was very, very little long-term success pre-1980 keeping anything collected off the reef.
There's a difference between getting lucky and having a plan.
And it working.
Yeah.
Right. And what came out of a lot of that literature was, okay, we don't really have a full understanding of how to make the nitrogen cycle work well in an aquarium yet. And it didn't work well in the 80s. Things changed to make it so that it did. But the way to try and get past it was you'd start with your tank with all your bleached coral and your bleached rock and everything sterile, and you'd get one fish and you'd put it in there for 6 months. And then 6 months later, you could get one more fish and you'd put it in there for 6 months. Well, if you're talking about a medium-sized angelfish, what's going to happen to that fish in 6 months? Living by itself.
It's going to get real comfy in that tank.
And?
It's not really going to accept any other company.
Let's say it starts out as being a really mellow female angelfish. What's going to happen in 6 months all by itself in its group of one?
Probably going to become a male.
Exactly.
Or at least start the process.
Start the process. An antheus, a clownfish, an angelfish, any one of those, even a Ras, living all by itself, is going to establish its territory and probably turn into its terminal sex phase, which is going to be the most aggressive sex phase. And so if you try to put another fish in, particularly, let's say it's a flame angel, and now 6 months later, you've got this established male flame angel in this tank, and you try to put in another flame angel, it's going to be brutal. They're going to kill each other. As we've gotten better at the additions of fish and started to recognize where those aggressions come from, we found success in pairing up fish we never thought possible. We have a pair of flame angels downstairs that we thought, you know what? Let's try it. They're both on the younger side. Let's put them together. And now it's a pair of flame angels that we put together on a whim.
Yeah, and I think that's worked with pretty much every coral beauty we've ever done.
Yeah.
And I can't remember a time of trying to pair them up and failing.
Right.
If we get them at the right sizes and ages and just are sort of thinking it through.
And then put them in the tank together. If we would separate those angels for a while and then try to put them together in an established aquarium, it would have a way lower chance of working.
Yeah.
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 it's kind of nice whenever, like, we come upon something like that where, like, starting a reef tank is very well known as a slow process, but a lot of the stuff that we're finding out about it, ways to make it easier, also involve being able to do it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, starting with live rock and live sand, you can pretty much start adding fish pretty quickly, and you can add more at once, and you can fill it, and it's good to have the coral to help, you know, everything grow together. So it's kind of a nice thing to have to be able to do.
It makes it a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other fish that kind of adding them together young will help make them, like, angels are pretty well established for that, but mm-hmm. does that work better with things like wrasses, or mainly stuff that does pair off like angels do?
Wrasses, it works well with, like, the flasher and fairy wrasses to, wrasses, actually works better if you don't have a female involved.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, if there's a bunch of males together, they get to posture, but there's nothing to really fight over.
Oh, so just like with humans.
Yeah. Antheus would be the perfect example.
Well, and I guess clownfish are the one we take for granted because we're getting them all young.
Yeah.
Dottybacks.
Dottybacks are a great example of that. I'm so skittish to add a big male dottyback with any other.
Yeah. I think that's good to be skittish about. But, you know, if you look in our display right now, we added a pair of purple of orchid dottybacks to that. And not only do they get along, but they actually hang out together.
Yeah,
that's which is weird. Not typical dottyback behavior.
No, we put them in there not because that's like we want to show people of like this is typical behavior.
Yeah.
For me, it was like I want to show you what never happens.
Yeah. I think tangs. I would say that happens with tangs.
That's
We don't get in as often big male tangs. We usually start with juveniles anyway. But if you've got big mature tangs, it's very tricky to add another one.
Like when we were trying to work with, this is a thing of the past, but wild yellow tangs. But we get in a group of like five biota captive bred ones.
Yeah.
That's a very different process of making that work.
So what's the practical side of this, right? We get the old school, what's the order I'm supposed to add my fish? When somebody comes in and says, okay, I want to add a fairy wrasse and a tang and a clownfish, what order do you tell them?
Who cares?
Exactly. Who cares?
Just do it. Whichever one you like the best, go first.
Those fish are going to be fine together. They're not going to care.
For me, it depends on how experienced the fish keeper is. If it's their first tank, I would recommend the clown. Only because that's the fish that's the, you know, if you make a mistake, it's probably going to be fine. And I know these other fish are really hardy, but that's the only criteria in my head.
I think you are exactly right from a getting your tank established point of view. Yeah. From an aggression point of view, doesn't matter. I love getting tanks established with clownfish. I think it's the perfect addition, the perfect start. They don't care about most of the other additions we're going to have in the tank. They're going to be good and hardy. They adapt really, really well to aquarium life. Start with those.
And I think they're great for like to break in any newbie. Like you're going to have those moments where you're like, oh, I screwed up. And a clownfish will be like, yeah, you did. Now fix it.
Yeah. but then we'll be fine.
Yeah. Then we'll be fine. Yeah.
So maybe this is a harder one.
Uh-huh.
So I want to add a purple tang, a powder blue tang, a yellow tang, and a coal tang to my tank. What order should I do that in?
Oh, God. And that's where we get to the fun part. To me, that's the meat of what this is about. How do you acclimate fish that typically have a challenge together? How do you get them to get along?
I think the ideal situation is if you can pull it off, and I'm not saying this is easy, add them all at the same time. Because then they're all on even footing. No one has an established territory. Nothing.
Yes.
And immediately throw in food.
Yeah. And now what if you can't? What if you're like most people and you say, check it out. I added them at the same time. I got my 180-gallon aquarium, and I've got my purple tang and my yellow tang. Those are the only tangs I want. Oh, look at that powder blue and that coal tang. I really want to add those two.
And now the wheels have fallen off the plan.
Yes. Which... by the way, anyone out there who has made a plan and stick to it. Stuck to it. If you can demonstrate to me that you have made your plan and you have stuck to it, I will send you a free t-shirt.
Yeah, and then okay, we'll all like take a moment of silence out of respect for your self-control.
Yes, up to 3 t-shirts, just in case all of a sudden we get all of this like overwhelmed with responses to this. But if you have, okay, here is my dry tank. Here's my fish plan. Here's the order I'm going to add them. And a year later, all of those fish were added at the same time. Has anybody out there actually done it? I want to know.
And you have more than one fish.
I was about to say, because I cheat that because I think at this table, I'm definitely the most risk averse when it comes to adding fish together. My solution is I just get a different tank and I put the one fish I want in it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and you know, come on, guys, be reasonable about this. You know what we're looking for here.
Yeah,
if it's Charles and you just did 2 fish, of course you're going to make that work if it's a species tank. But if you've got your reef tank...
I still want to see it, but you don't get a t-shirt.
You don't get a t-shirt. Yep.
You do get a thumbs up.
Yeah. And I just made up all the rules, and one of the rules I'm going to make up is I can change the rules if I so decide to change the rules.
Right? So let's go back to this tang example.
Okay, let's go back to this tang example.
Because this is very practical to us.
Yes.
What? No.
Yes.
So do we want to tell this story in the framing of how we did it?
You know, I think that's probably why I named those specific fish.
Okay, just making sure. So the backstory for this is how long have you had that 220 set up?
That 220 has been set up for 4 years? 5 years?
It's been set up longer than I've been here, but when I started, it was still clownfish.
Okay.
So how long have the... Because the purple and the yellow tang predate me, so I genuinely don't know. How long have those two been in there?
How long have you been here?
About 3 years.
3.5 years.
Yeah, okay. Probably.
Yes, totally made that up, by the way.
But it is probably something like that. I think those are some of the first things that we added after we converted that from the clownfish tank.
I'm just trying to give people context for just how...
And I think we added a youngish yellow tang and then the purple tang later.
We did. And the purple tang was bigger than the yellow tang when we put it in. And the reason for
a third larger.
Yeah. If you've got a small fish that's established and a big fish comes in, the small fish goes, "Ah, crap, now I have to share." And the big fish goes, "Oh, this is now my kingdom, and you are a part of my kingdom. Young one, serve me well."
And you know what we also had at the time that we did that? A sailfin tang that was twice the size of either of them.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He was the boss of all of them. Yep.
So it's something that on paper probably shouldn't have worked. It's three, I mean, like, you know, just...
They were all zebra soma.
They were all very similar looking tangs, and we did just kind of throw one in at a time. We didn't, you know, it was just, we just did it as we did it, and we were lucky that it worked out really well.
210-gallon tank, lots of live rock. We move some stuff around when we add the fish, which breaks up the territories a little bit. We did all of those things right-ish.
Yeah, and we're lucky that that yellow tang and that purple tang are best buds.
They are buds.
So this is where I come into the picture, because my perspective is when I started working here, those two were best friends.
Yeah.
Every tang we tried to add into that tank... they would gang up on.
And take it out.
Yeah.
Together.
Yes.
And it was kind of freaky. I've never seen tangs like gang up on something like that.
Oh, yeah. And the other tang would be looking at him like, "Why can't we be friends?
I surrender.
Just want some food."
Told you I'd break into song.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of what the...
We even tried adding a rabbit fish. And they did the same thing.
They took it out.
They eat the same food.
Right.
So then let's say 3.5 years later.
Yeah.
Actually, let's say like 3 years later, because the tanks that are in there now have been in there for a while.
Like a week, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'm trying to remember what happened. I think you wanted to put the coal tang in.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be with the powder blue that was very outgoing.
Right.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah. Can we put them both in? Yes.
Yeah. So then the strategy there became, all right, so we're not just introducing one tang.
Mm-hmm.
We're introducing two new tangs that know each other and kind of get along.
Mm-hmm.
So then we added two acclimation boxes into the tank.
That, to me, is just... That is a game changer.
Yeah. I think in this case, and I say specifically this case,
yeah,
adding not just one new tang, two was very important as well.
Right.
Only because the purple and the yellow tang will gang up on tangs.
Right. Yeah.
Making it kind of a quote-unquote even fight,
yeah,
made them very clearly more adverse to doing that.
And we should mention at this point that a four-year-old established reef tank, once you add fish to that tank, they are not coming back out.
Right.
Like, they're alive or dead, you can't get in those rocks. You can't pull all your coral apart. You can't tear down the entire tank to get one bullied fish out.
It is so hard to get a fish out of an established reef. A big one. A 200-plus gallon aquarium.
We're talking about, price of coal tangs rocketed up to $400. Powder blue is $150 to $180, I think.
I think $129.99.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track this season. So, let's say at least $500 worth of fish.
Yeah.
And we want them forever.
And fish that we've grown pretty attached to, having them in our systems and just value because they are what they are.
Yeah, this coal tang and this powder blue tang very clearly went into the display because we liked that coal tang and that powder blue.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the coal tang was... So the Hawaii banned the collection of all aquarium fish. Coal tangs are endemic to Hawaii. So we had this coal tang, which all of a sudden they are no longer available. So how much is it worth? It's really priceless, but it's not... They don't have the appeal that some of the other really expensive tangs have. That might change once they're going to become rare. But what would we do with it? And then it was, we want to have a coal tang around.
Yeah. I'm just trying to contextualize it. And why don't we just want to throw the fish in there? Because we're not going to get them out because they're valuable both morally and financially.
Yes. Yes.
So... Explain to the audience, what exactly is an acclimation box?
An acclimation box, the purpose of that is it's simply an acrylic box that gives the fish enough room to be fine in, that has holes drilled in it so the aggressive fish, the potentially aggressive fish, can see it, they can smell it, their little lateral lines can interact and they can feel each other, but they can't hurt each other. So we use fish traps as our acclimation boxes. There are some companies out there that make some proprietary acclimation boxes, and they're about the same size and about the same price as some of the fish traps, but the fish traps are dual purpose, and they work just fine.
And they're available.
Yeah. We can get them really easily. A fish trap.
A critter keeper even works well if you can drill holes in it and mount it in an easy way and make sure that there's some circulation happening through it.
Yeah. Magnet mounts work great. Yes, you need to spend the big money on the good magnets. The $20 or $30 little mini magnets to clean your tank are not going to do it. But the $100 big magnets, put one in the critter keeper, put one in the outside of the tank, holds that thing in place really well.
A $20 hefty, or $30 hefty, hefty. Magnet is just a tank decoration anyway.
Yeah.
What's it going to scrape off?
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy.
Yeah, so that's an acclimation box.
So, when someone asks you, how long do I keep it in the acclimation box? What do you tell them?
As long as it takes.
Solid.
Right. So, when we first put those tangs in, let me back up a little bit and we talk about tangs and what their other name is. That other name is surgeon fish. Do you know why they're called a surgeon fish, Amy?
I do. Do you want me to spoil it?
Yeah.
Because right at base of their tail.
The caudal peduncle.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word.
It's a fun word.
There's that little white, usually, dot. And that dot is surgically sharp.
Exactly.
Exactly like a scalpel.
Yep. Yeah.
Biological stabby instrument.
Yeah. And it is sharp. I have gotten sliced by those, and I didn't know I got sliced by it.
Until you saw the blood?
Yeah.
Wow. It's so
sharp. I barely felt it and went, whoa. And it was actually, it was a cut that required a Band-Aid. Not stitches, but definitely a Band-Aid.
Wow.
Yep. It was impressive how sharp. I was like, wow, I'm bleeding on my fingertip. And that's
so cool. You know,
yeah. I had no idea it was that sharp. And so when you see, you'll see tangs, what they'll do is they'll kind of go tail to tail and tail slap, right? And that doesn't seem like much, but they're tail slapping with razor sharp samurai swords.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll see those little shreddies coming up on the fins. That's the first sign that these tangs are not getting along. Right.
And when we put these tangs in the acclimation boxes and we put them in the tank, that yellow and that purple, they backed right up to them and started smacking around those acclimation boxes to try and get a go. You are not welcome in this space.
You have no power here.
Then the other fish didn't leave and they didn't die and they didn't get hurt.
And pretty soon they got bored with it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's, who knows what's going on in those fish's head when that happens. Is it they get the chance to sort of, I don't know, oh, look tough and then work out their differences? Or do they just conclude, wow, you've got some crazy imaginary force field. I don't want to mess with you. Who knows?
Yeah. This guy is so strong. I was trying to stab him for 20 minutes and he didn't even flinch.
Yeah, or is it that fish has now been in here for 2 weeks? He hasn't tried to hurt me. It hasn't tried to hurt me. It hasn't tried to steal my food. It hasn't tried to steal my girlfriend. And it doesn't want to sleep in my house.
Yeah.
And that's what, I think it was it was almost 3 weeks, right?
No, we put him in 8 days.
8 days.
We were brave.
8 days.
But they also...
Brave, like, is one way to put it. Impatient?
Well, impatient.
No. Excited.
What really happened was in the first hour, the two local... like the native tangs, I'll say, went nuts.
Yeah.
After that first hour, didn't care.
Nothing.
Then they we waited a week without any symptoms of aggression. And then we were like, okay.
Let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. So then 6 foot tank, we put in a feeding clip with a fresh sheet of algae on the left side. The acclimation boxes were on the right side. And those tangs are... the yellow tang, the purple tang, when there's an algae clip in there, they are on it, right? So immediately they rushed over, and that gives us the opportunity to sneak the new fish into the system. And so Charles and I together dumped the powder blue and the coal. Yes, carefully released.
There you go.
The powder blue and Charles dumped. I carefully released. The coal tang immediately went and hid, but the powder blue went, hey, lunch, I'm on it, and joined the yellow and the purple. The yellow went, what? Fine, we remember you, you're good. And it's been great.
Yeah, there was like that moment of, should I fight you? There's food here.
Yeah, and last time I tried to fight you, it didn't work anyway, so what's the point? The coal tang about 3 hours later was out and about, and now all four of those tangs truck around like they're like...
That was so satisfying.
Oh, it's good.
I also think that introducing... I think in most cases, introducing food immediately for the resident fish distracts them long enough. Like, I know that the other fish have been watching and learning in the environment, but it gives them about like 5 minutes to actually poke around a little bit and get a little bit more of a lay of the land before... Yeah. The residents can turn around and get an idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think it's vitally important that the food happens on the other side of the tank.
Yeah.
Right? All of our fish have been conditioned to the manna from heaven concept, right? The lids open up, something dumps in, that's where food comes from. So if the lid opens up and you dump in a new fish, their instinct is going to be, charge! Oh. Right? And that instinct of that other fish that you just put in, my world just got turned upside down. Oh, crap. I'm out of here. I need to run.
Something's
coming
at me. And
there are 10 fish charging at me at the same time.
And if that fish runs, the other fish look at it like, you're running. I should chase you.
It's like if you see someone running away from your yard, your instinct and response is, what did they take from my yard?
Yes. What bad thing did they do that makes them have to run? Right. And so that is absolutely the worst way to introduce a new fish to an aquarium. So feed the fish on the other side of the tank, distract them, and kind of sneak the new one in.
Yeah.
Anyway, that system that worked super well. Acclimation boxes. They're my new best friend for establishing.
So is this something that we feel like should be essential when adding new fish to your tank in general?
I won't say for me personally in general, just because I know a lot of people that try to keep very different stuff together. Because like in a 75, how many tangs are you going to put in there?
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I think if you want multiple similar fish, like a tang, like if you want a coal tang, a powder blue tang, a yellow tang, and a purple tang, you need an acclimation box.
I think tangs are the number one. That's it. In fact, I think we should try this. I think we should try to introduce another two tangs to that tank.
Okay.
I think we should. I mean, if it's about pushing it, if it's about like,
or more like about verifying.
How well does this work?
Yeah.
Let's take it one more step.
I mean, I'm not going to complain about more tangs.
Yeah.
I like data.
Yeah.
You know, is this a fluke thing? And we've used this process in adding fish to our retail tanks. We've used it in, we've a couple of times introduced fish for people. It hasn't happened very frequently that these fish just don't get along. I think only thing I can think of is that one wimpy sailfin tang.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
Because
of a fish that didn't read the book.
Yeah. Because this one is really frustrating.
I know.
Because they're socially, there's no aggression.
None.
No one has ever even taken a swipe at this sailfin.
Right.
But he is not competitive for food. So he is not socially compatible with that group.
He can't be in a tank with a bunch of other robust feeders. We've had him out with this group. They all get along. We put him back in the acclimation box because we watched him get thin. Put him in the acclimation box. He's shy, but he eats. Put him with the group. He doesn't get any food.
I think it's such an important example for this discussion, though, because knowing the type of fish that you're getting is important, and it's the essential place to start. But we talked about not reading the book. Knowing the individual fish that you're getting is just as important.
Yeah. My favorite example of that was I really love our quarantine process because I get to spend a month with that specific fish.
Right.
Learning that fish.
Right.
And I remember in one day I had two people in at the same time and they were both asking for a tamini tang.
Right.
And I told one of them,
this is a great story, by the way.
This is the tamini tang you want because your tank is full of jerks and this guy is stuck up. He'll fit in just fine. You want this one because this one's a pansy and your tank is full of fish that are pretty calm.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to outcompete anyone. He'll be just fine. He will be your biggest fish, but he'll be fine. Same species of fish, but if they had flipped those individuals, I guarantee it would have been disaster in both tanks.
One would have starved to death and one would have killed two fish before they managed to get it out of there.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you look at individual fish, instead of looking at, do yellow tangs get along with purple tangs? You need to look at it like, you know, I know my dog doesn't get along with my neighbor's dog, but it does get along with this other dog. They're still all dogs. They're still all fish. We need to look at these fish as the individuals that they are.
Yeah, and they live, I don't know, 15, 20 years generally.
Yeah.
So they have plenty of time to develop an individual personality. They have a level of intelligence that deserves a little bit of respect and consideration. So finding the right fit for your tank may not just be about color palette.
It's a yellow tang. It's going to be like all other yellow tangs. Not true.
Yeah, this is a juvenile, captive-bred yellow tang, and unlike the other two in the tank, it's coming up to look at me while I'm looking in there.
And the other two are not.
Yeah.
I've never had two female clownfish with the same personality.
Right.
Like a distinct example for me was the first saddleback clown female we had when I started working.
Mm-hmm.
She was completely fine with me messing with anything in the tank, but if my hand went near her boyfriend,
She was mad.
Now ruthless.
Ruthless. But the pair of clowns we had in the display at the time,
didn't
that
matter.
Female didn't care where my hand was. If it was in the tank, that was fair game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I say that with all the affection I can have for a fish that wanted me to die.
And that's what's so hard to know as an individual going to a store and buying fish. I feel for people.
It's so hard.
We do our best to try and bridge that gap for you and get to know the fish and make those appropriate recommendations. But is there a way to tell just by looking for 5 minutes?
No. There's so much going on here.
And in 5 minutes, you're only getting a snapshot of the social environment of that tank in that 5 minutes. So that's not a lot to go on.
No, no. So what are some of the good takeaways, right? When we're looking at a group of fish, we first have to remember that just because we know the size, color, and shape of that fish, we also have to consider the individual personality of that fish, right? But then if we're trying to determine what is the higher likelihood of this working, that's when we look at, all right, here's the three triggers of aggression. Are you going to steal my house? Are you going to steal my food? Are you going to steal my girlfriend? If you're not going to do any three of those things, I probably don't care about you. And then we're going to look at, all right, how do we increase the likelihood first? And these are in order of importance. It's shape. Fish see a silhouette before they see a color. If you are the same shape as me, you're going to try and steal either my food or you're going to try to live in the same house. Then it's color. If you are the same color as me, you're probably going to try and steal my girlfriend. You're going to go after the same type of mate. And then it's size. Big fish don't care about little fish. Little fish understand to stay out of the way of big fish. Two fish to the same size have to work it out.
Work it out is a very nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Catch me outside.
Have to settle their differences.
Yeah. Settle their differences.
Take us to the parking lot.
Yeah. So do it gradually and do it slowly. Do it with intent. Look at those things when you are acclimating, when you are working on social acclimation. Look at those triggers. I got to say one more cool thing about angelfish. Angelfish are really easy to sex, and this is one of the challenges that we don't have with tangs, because tangs are a lot harder to sex. Male tangs are more aggressive than female tangs, but they're much harder to tell. Angelfish, all of them, yes, I use the word all, males have a long cheek spine. Females have a short cheek spine. If you're not sure if they're going to get along, get two of them that have extremely different length cheek spines. Particularly if it's in the same genus, but in the same species even. That's why those two flame angels, that's why we tried them together. One of them has this cute little teeny cheek spine. It's a female. The other one, it's there, but it's not very prominent. It's probably a developing male. Put them in the same tank, they're like, hey, sup?
Mm-hmm. That in combination with just being different sizes means that they don't have to question who's going to develop into the male.
Yeah, yeah.
That one's already on its way, and it's already twice as big, so why bother?
Yeah. If you're trying to pair or group or acclimate a long, skinny fish with a big, round, circular fish, as long as they can't fit in each other's mouth, they're probably going to be just fine.
And make your life easy. Don't try and do groups.
Don't go do... Oh, you know what? We need to touch on that too, don't we?
Yeah, it's... The only saltwater fish.
Hang on, we need to stop and reflect on that sigh.
I just get so sick of hearing sad stories. That's all. Right. I just want to be able to help people.
See, the sad stories I get sick of, the ones that really drive me up the wall, is I have all these sad stories in our back pocket at any given time, and then someone will come in here and say, "Well, online it says." Yeah. And I'm like, well...
Six places online told me I could put green chromas all together.
Or the store down the street said you can put six green chromas together, you know, from the 19-year-old kid who's had a fish tank for six months and says you can do it.
Well, here's my counterpoint.
Yeah.
Let's not even go there. All right. My counterpoint is I'm trying to convince you to buy one fish. That guy's trying to convince you to buy six fish.
That should be obvious. We want less of your money.
I am begging you to give me less of your money.
Right.
And you're mad at me.
Right.
And all I say is just ask whoever told you that you could for how long. How long have you had six chromas in a 75-gallon tank?
Right.
3 months? Nothing.
Nothing.
A year? You don't have six anymore. Right. But maybe you've got three. Five years? One or two.
Right.
Also, fun fact, Matthew Rittenrick's book on the Complete Illustrated Guide to Breeding Marine Fishes says you cannot keep chromas in groups because they don't live in groups.
Ugh. Finally, it's somewhere in writing, so people have to stop listening to us and they'll believe it somewhere else.
I know.
Bangai cardinals. Bangai cardinals. Don't. Same story, guys.
Any cardinals. Don't.
Any cardinals. Don't do it.
Antheus.
Here's the
thing.
In
large tanks.
With a lot of food. A lot of food.
Right.
And all females, maybe one male, right? Maybe.
Only one male
only
for sure.
Only one male for
only
sure.
Only one male for sure. And you better be really sure you only have females. The only fish that I can think of that I'm comfortable, two species that I'm comfortable with multiple, more than just a pair. Anybody else? Unless you have a giant tank, and there are some exceptions. I'm thinking of two species. How many could come up with that you can keep, like, we're going to say more than two?
There are a couple of fish that are like 1 or 2 inches that I think in a large enough tank they'd be able to establish separate
territories. No, but I mean that they're going to like form a group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Actually, not like jawfish. You can keep a jawfish. You can keep jawfish in, I think it's two square feet.
Yeah.
Right? So if you've got, no, maybe it's even 18 inches.
I think that's kind of the rule for chromas too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the rule of thumb at least I've given to people is one or a pair per 2 square feet. So that's a completely different story. Right. This is fish that are going to hang out together.
A cohesive group. And don't name any names. I can think of two with a possible third. Two different species. Charles?
I think...
Long term.
Three? They're all for the same reason.
I can think of three.
Are they all in the same genus?
Yeah.
Not the same genus, but the same group.
Not the same genus for you? There's one outside the genus?
So, I'm assuming, are you guys talking about Trimagobies?
I am not.
Because I'm thinking Trimagobies, Eviota gobies, and Clown gobies.
I'm comfortable with all of those, but they're not going to form a group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you thinking of?
Saddleback clowns, pink skunk clowns, and orange skunk clowns.
There you go. That's my list.
This saddleback's still whittled down a little bit.
Their potential is there, but they're less likely to.
Our group did.
Yeah.
But now the eight are getting along fantastically, but we started with 12.
I think there are other reasons that the...
It could be.
Yeah.
So here's the thing.
But
this is a great example. I want to delve into this a little
bit.
Okay. The female in the first group, personality-wise, was very different than the female we have now.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
And for me personally, I ascribe the success from the first time to the degree of success we've seen this time to that.
It's also a bigger tank.
You're also right.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. But that's it.
They will be like a little tribe, though. That's definitely true.
Yeah.
Like they all interact and have that like hierarchy that you want.
Right.
Although I have heard, like, according to Jake, all the Eviotas they add to their big display hang out together.
Do they?
Yeah.
Cool.
But we haven't tried it.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Like, even neon cleaner gobies, we've put three in a 10 and two of them got...
Down to two.
Out-competed.
I've seen many neon cleaner gobies in the wild. Always in pairs.
Yeah.
Only in groups, just like chromas. When they're young, when they're juveniles, when they're tiny.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye. Yeah.
By the way, a group of 9 3/4-inch neon cleaner gobies on a coral head looks really cool.
Yeah, I bet.
But it doesn't last. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Don't do it. How do I get it to work?
one don't or two it. Per 2 foot of space.
Right. Firefish doesn't work. Dartfish doesn't work.
There's a few exceptions, but it's tricky.
For groups or for pairs?
For groups. So there are two specific species I can think of that I've heard of good successes with, and they actually live in groups in the wild. It's the zebra dartfish and the blue gudgeon dartfish. Those are the only two, but here's the thing. I generally don't recommend it for people because those are both fish that get decently sized.
7 inches,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, the blue gudgeon, yeah. The zebra dartfish is like a 5-inch fish. So if you're putting in 5 or 6 of those in a tank, that's a big part of your bio load.
That's it.
You know, I have a great exception.
What?
Sharks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby.
Our like sharks love each other.
They do. Our 3 sharks get so...
They snuggle.
Amy, you have my permission to drop the microphone and walk out of the room.
So if you want to have a group of fish that get along and want to hang out together, you have to get, like we had, a 360-gallon tank and keep 3 sharks.
Yep.
Well, and plummet into a 1,200-gallon system.
That helps a lot.
Perfect.
But I will also say that one of my favorite things about them is that they occasionally fall victim to what I call sibling syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you're just in each other's face long enough, at some point, mm-hmm. someone's taking a swing at someone else. Mm-hmm. This Saturday, we experienced it. So I was feeding them, and Pi tried to take a fish out of Thea's mouth.
Oh, don't do that, Pi.
She's normally pretty good-natured about it.
Yeah.
Saturday, she was not.
You know, we were feeding her on Friday, too, and she, like, grabbed onto his dorsal fin when he went to her target.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on some level, I will admit, I kind of appreciated it because she's usually a little too calm about the boys taking her food.
Right.
So watching her tell them to go away, get out of my face, was kind of refreshing, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did she actually hurt him?
No.
No.
Did she startle him? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did he deserve it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
He knows better.
Pie's a little stinker.
He is.
He's turning into my favorite, though.
Yeah, you guys have something going on.
Oh, yeah. We started, like, bonding. And
yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely recognize people.
I was playing with Pie for almost a half hour on Friday.
Aw.
Yeah.
And Pie just kept coming back around and saying, yep, scratch me right there. Oh, yeah, that's the spot right there. Aww. Give me another scratch.
He's really grown up well.
For the first time.
Rufus
today.
Did?
Yeah.
Rufus.
Ah.
He normally does not care I exist, but he came up today.
Nice.
He just wants to cuddle with his little buddy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, his big buddy now. He's gotten so big.
Rufus and Pie are best friends. Thea's a little bit more independent.
She's very human focused.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't figured out by now, we kind of like sharks.
We like our sharks.
We like,
and I, it, all other
I'm not
sharks.
Picky. I love sharks.
We just like our sharks the best.
Yep, yeah, I'm a fan.
That's really the only options we've got for you for communal saltwater fish.
But
if somebody tells you differently, they are trying to sell you something or they don't know better. Prove me wrong.
Yeah.
And by the way, Amy said it very well. 3 months doesn't count. A year, it didn't happen. Didn't happen. Unless you've got like 600 gallons, maybe 300 gallons.
Yeah,
but like we said, like a 1 square foot.
Yeah, if you've beat the one or a pair for 24-inch square, if you've beaten that rule with any fish, I want to hear about it.
Yes.
So email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. Send us a Facebook message. Leave a comment on a random YouTube video. Tell us however you can find us. And follow us on Instagram. I don't know. We're everywhere.
Yeah. Let's talk about that one because it's good stuff.
Yeah.
I think we covered a whole lot of ground here tonight. I think we covered the takeaways. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to go have lots of fun and let's keep those hands wet.